This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session shares my conversation with candidate for school committee Camille Bernstein. This is one of a series of conversations with the candidates for the Franklin election on November 2nd, 2021. I do this to provide Franklin, Mass. Voters with accurate and timely info that they can use to cast an informed vote. Publication of the answers or interview responses does not constitute an endorsement of this or any candidate. We cover the candidate questions as previously developed in conjunction with the community and shared with the candidates in advance. Five of the questions are general in nature. The sixth is specific to the role of the candidate, in this case, for the school committee. Our conversation runs about 23 minutes, so let's listen to my interview with Camille Bernstein. Okay, so Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet at WFPR.FM and on the local Franklin, Mass. Area dial at 102.9. Here for another candidate interview for the school committee, in this case, with Camille Bernstein. Camille, welcome and thank you for taking time to do this.
Thank you so much, Steve. I'm glad to.
So for those who don't know you, briefly, tell us your Franklin story. Tell us a little bit about your life here.
So I actually came here by mistake. I lived in Dorchester and Jamaica Plain when I was in grad school and directly after for a couple of years. And then I went home to Kentucky to like heal a broken heart. And my friends convinced me to come back to Natick where I was teaching. And I said, okay, so I'll fly in and pick out an apartment. And they said, no, we'll pick out something for you. And they were like 25 years older than I was. And they went to the newspaper and they found a Franklin apartment. I had never heard of Franklin. And I thought at first, I'm a 29-year-old single woman and you're putting me out in the boonies. So I just took the apartment thinking, oh, I'll move later. But I ended up immersing myself in the community by hosting some exchange students from Dean College. They used to have this terrific ESL program.
Yep.
And I hosted, I think, six different young women. And one of them actually lived with me for 9 months and she was 17. And actually in June, I went to go visit her and her new baby. So we've kept in touch for 17 or 18 years after that. Yeah, she's like a little sister to me. So I met my husband online. So it wasn't a matter of needing to negotiate where we lived. And we discussed moving away, but neither of us could afford to buy houses where we teach in Hopkinton and Natick. And we actually found a house we could afford that had a bit of property. And we found the community was really friendly. I've found that a lot of people come from elsewhere. And so they seem to be more friendly in reaching out to create those connections.
Yep.
So unlike a lot of people, we weren't looking at the property tax rates. We weren't looking at the schools. We were just a young couple who just liked where we were planted and decided to stay here.
Interesting. Yeah, I hadn't heard that angle of it. I'm one of the ones who also came in from outside, but we were looking at it for two points in particular. One, my commute into Boston via the train, and then the schools for the kids who are now up and grown and out of the house. And now where do we go? That's another story for another time.
In 2012, we decided to renovate our tiny cape, and we decided to renovate because every house we looked at would mess up our commutes. We each have a 23-minute commute along country roads that's really peaceful. Mm-hmm. And we just don't want to change that. So we decided to stay here because it was great for both of us.
So moving into the next question then, participating in elections, of which we'll be gearing up for in November, is one of the key freedoms of American life, and voting is one of the primary responsibilities of citizens. While the law does not require us to vote, voting is a very important part of any democracy. So what can you tell us about your own voting record? And if you've not been an active voter, you know, explain a little bit why and how important it is, if it is, that we elect people who are active participants in the election process. I know it's a mouthful, but...
Sure. Well, when I read this question a couple of weeks ago, I thought, oh, I didn't know you could pull up your own voting records. And so I requested them. And The federal and state elections, there was no problem there. I've been politically active. I've worked for campaigns. I've donated money to many candidates in Massachusetts and in battleground states. I've done letter writing. I've written to my Congress people on the state and federal level. I've done phone banking. So I was kind of surprised to see that in municipal elections, it wasn't as consistent as my voting record in federal elections. And I guess I was embarrassed to be a part of the 83% that don't vote in these elections. And I realized I'd been so focused on Natick's elections because they were more determinant of my my livelihood, my job. And I also, I guess too, it's a sign of contentment and complacency that, you know, I loved my kids' teachers. I love the principal. I love the school. And I really didn't have any complaints. And it wasn't until the last maybe, you know, 6 or 7 years, I started hearing about our budget problems. I started hearing complaints about raising fees when that's to be expected. And I discovered that we have in the bottom quartile per pupil spending. So I guess being active in all these national state elections was fulfilling to me. And I felt like I would email Rep Roy or I'd email my federal reps, but I really can only make a true difference in these municipal elections because as many people have told me while I've been campaigning, I know you, but I don't know anyone else whom to vote for. And I know my husband and I would skim the Milford News and look at the candidates. And so I've been really happy that we have a lot of other forums, including your podcast, including the Candidates Night, including all the Facebook pages and the ways that people are representing themselves, getting their word out. And also a number of the school committee candidates and I, there's a group of us, about 7, who've been trying to work together, collaborate, brainstorm, and promote each other because we all know that just knowing one person to vote for isn't really helpful. So municipal elections, I think they're almost more important than the other elections because fortunately they are less dependent on big money and they tend to be less partisan. And sometimes you can avoid that nonsense. And also they happen every 2 years. So you can really keep track of what's going down the street. And then make your voice known. So municipal elections may be the last place where it's one person, one vote, and it matters.
We could spend some separate time going further on those, but be mindful of your time today and what we're about to do. Let's switch to the next question accordingly in terms of the pandemic that we're all in and maybe getting out of. It depends on where we are, what winds are blowing. But have you been vaccinated for COVID-19? And do you think there could be a mask mandate for Franklin? But the really quite real question is, what measures should government take to protect the public from the virus? And how should those measures be delineated between local, state, and federal?
So I've absolutely had my vaccine. It was as soon as I could. And I would gladly take a booster as well, owing to my own vulnerabilities, my health risks, and my son's age. He's unvaccinated. I also am a public school teacher. And so I'm, you know, in this building for 7 hours a day, with a lot of bodies. Fortunately at my school, there's, a high vaccination rate among both the staff and the students. So that's making us feel much more safe. As far as a mask mandate, I'm really happy that the state made the right decision for the schools instead of leaving it down to the towns. And as far as businesses, the direction's less clear. We seem to be doing pretty well in Franklin. But because people are not staying in their own towns like they used to, I mean, they commute to Boston, they fly to, you know, Oregon, they move around quite a bit, that we can't just look at our own numbers. We have to really be mindful of the towns surrounding us and also how the state's going as well. I suppose I'm feeling like other people. I was feeling pretty good this summer, and then there was nervousness getting back to school. My own school didn't have any transmissions as far as they could tell during the school day, but I am a little bit worried with the fall coming and the winter coming and more people being indoors. I looked up that we are 67% vaccinated across the state, which puts us in the top five. And those are good numbers, but they're still not that, you know, that golden number of herd immunity.
Right.
I guess my overall feeling is a bit of dismay at people's resistance to the inconvenience of masks as if it tramples on their liberties. Because I just think of all the sacrifices made throughout our history for the good of the community, whether it be sheltering runaway enslaved people. People took risks and they took inconveniences, or they helped neighbors during the Depression, or even how many of our grandparents were drafted during the war. And so they went across the ocean to fight fascism. And so if my grandpa was willing to fight fascism across the ocean, I'm more than willing to wear a mask to preserve the health of my neighbor. So the mindset of, I think it has revealed the struggle of America, our love of independence and our need for community thinking. And I think that this, at least in my lifetime, the pandemic has shown that tension between those two things. And I tend to be someone who's more community-minded than more individually-minded.
So in regards to that community, that can give us a step into our third, or segue into our third set. So what do you think are the three most important actions you believe that we need to do to move Franklin forward?
If it's okay, I'm going to focus on schools after making just a broader statement about the town. I remember moving here and people would say, oh my God, it's grown so much in the last 20 years. But I feel in my last 18 years, it's grown quite a bit. So I guess my top concerns are controlled growth that also protects and expands our green spaces to make this not just a bedroom community where you sleep and store your stuff and then go off to your job. I think it's important that we do the planned budget efficiency audit, and even consider if our tax rate can support the goals and desires of our populace. You know, our needs change, and I'm not an expert on any of that, but I think to me, it's a sign of our values, where we put our money. I also was really moved by a Franklin senior who spoke at the school committee the other night. Mackenzie, I think was her name. And she shared her experiences with hate speech against the LGBTQIA community. And some of us talked about it afterwards, and it's not just on the schools to promote a welcoming environment. It's on the community. So I hope that the community itself can work together to provide a welcoming and celebratory safe space for all of us. It would reflect the diversity that's already here in Franklin.
I was going to clarify for those who hadn't, you mentioned Franklin senior, so I'm assuming that's referring to Mackenzie Atwood, who is the senior high school representative at the school committee, as opposed to a senior, meaning somebody older. Because senior can go a couple of ways. And since I'm also a senior, I'm not one of those seniors. I'm one of these seniors. So.
Sure. Yes, she was a senior in high school. As to school priorities, it's important that we have a stable budget that doesn't put teachers in peril every year. They shouldn't wonder if they're going to be laid off. I think I, along with many people, was horrified to hear that 103 were laid off last year. The COVID monies have helped bridge the gap, but the superintendent and the town council have been talking about the budget for years, far, far long before this. We need to have, for the schools, we need to have a robust mentoring program. Nationwide, 30% of teachers leave in the first 5 years. And very often it's because they're overwhelmed and don't feel supported. It's burnout and stress. And the pandemic has made this crisis even worse. I was happy to hear, and I guess it was two school meetings ago, the vertical alignment going on K to 12, because I think having that document, that living, breathing, but also flexible document, gives a structure to new teachers while also offering them some autonomy to share their passions with their students. Mm-hmm. And also to, I don't want curriculum documents to be a sort of lockstep script that has to happen, but it should be flexible enough to change with the students you have in front of you. And finally, I am happy in the goals of the district that they prioritize both student and staff wellness. Not all mm-hmm. schools mention the staff. In addition to SEL for students, it's essential to retaining high quality staff is a feeling that you are respected, that you are cared for. And I think that although the teachers themselves may not think about the budget directly, that pressure of making do constantly is a significant source of anxiety, a source of burnout, a source of, can I really make a difference?
I think the overall integration that you're talking about, if I recall, and I think I missed that particular meeting because I know I did miss the one with the review of the district and schools improvement plans, but I know they've been working on the portrait of a graduate, mm-hmm. which by at least agreeing as to what the graduates from the high school should look like, that they can work backwards to say, you need to do this here, need to do mm-hmm. this here, need to do this here in a developmental way to get to that endpoint.
And actually, I have to praise the Franklin Public Schools for their clear and concise portrait of a graduate. But really was pleased to see that I think it's four different bullet points of the portrait of a graduate. And that's something that teachers and administrators can get their hands around and really focus all of their energies on creating those.
And then while we've covered for the listeners, there were five specific questions that were kind of generic across all the candidates. The fifth one is, what experience or background would help you serve in this role? And what would you bring to the table that helps set you apart from some of the other candidates?
Well, first of all, the candidates that I've gotten to know and that I've worked with are extraordinarily talented, and they come from a variety of positions. So that's what we want on a school committee, is a variety of experiences, because not everyone's going to be the budget expert. So I think that what sets me apart is my 22 years as an educator, 22 years as a public school, high school educator. I also taught adult ESL for 5 years. I wouldn't say that my experience as a teacher automatically makes me a good candidate, but my work as a teacher leader does. I have served as a team leader on two different teams in my English department. I've taught all levels and most grades in the department over my 22 years. I started in 2003 teaching online courses. I've taught hybrid courses since then. And I've also served for 4 years as the union president. And that in particular, not only, I think, giving a teacher's perspective, but I have worked on the other side of the aisle mm-hmm. with the school committee, settling disputes, designing policies, negotiating contracts. And we used a collaborative model instead mm-hmm. of here's what we're going to give you and mm-hmm. Waiting for their answer. So I would be interested in exploring collaborative bargaining. I've also designed and led professional development within my department, my school, and in a number of states over the last 20 years. Some of the topics are mindfulness, adolescent psychology, digital literacy, difficult conversations, and also I helped a couple schools navigate their move from a typical school environment to a one-to-one. Mm-hmm. I keep up with new directions in curriculum and pedagogy while retaining institutional knowledge. I've become one of those women who's like, I've been here a long time and I've seen it all. And I've overseen MCAS analysis in our department. I've led committees for the accreditation process and served on visiting teams as well. And I guess the last piece of experience that was helpful to me is I did a year-long position as a member of the National Humanities Center's Teacher Advisory Council. I'm still two decades in. I still love learning. I still like discovering new things to do and new ways to look at it. And I know that society and students need change, and we need to change with them.
Thank you for that. And then the final question, focused specifically on the school committee, which the role you're working towards and you've been touting along the way here. With the public school district managing the largest portion of Franklin's budget, what are your ideas, if you have any, in regards to helping to solve, and I think you've alluded to, that kind of structural deficit in our operating budget?
Well, I know that there are processes that happen, including a master facilities plan, a budget efficiency audit for the whole town. Checking might require looking at redistricting so that the educational and physical capacity of the buildings is considered. We should continue to push and use our voices as school committee members to push the state to reconsider the funding model. But I think, you know, we have to have a hard look at what we fund in Franklin. When I worked as the president of the local teachers union, a wise mentor who was actually on the other side of the aisle said, "You get the union you deserve." And I think the same can be said of the schools. Hmm. We get a school system that we deserve. If we don't prioritize funding the budget, we cannot keep expecting schools, teachers to perform, teachers to stay, and our community to thrive. So that being in the bottom quartile is something that we should be embarrassed about and reconsider.
Thank you for that. We've covered effectively the six questions that I wanted to ask you. Is there something that I haven't asked you that you would want the voters and residents of Franklin to understand about you as we prepare for November 2nd?
Well, this isn't me punting the question, but I think this interview, along with the voters guide questions and then materials that I've posted on my Facebook page, I think will give people a good sense of who I am. I'm also absolutely happy and open and welcome to answer people's questions. And I've had a couple of people pose questions on my page and I've answered them in full, I think.
Thank you for that. And further, a quick reminder for the listeners, last day to register to vote is October 13th. As we get closer to the actual ballots arriving, there'll be additional info around the early voting times. Specifically, I know she's announced October 23rd and 24th, the Saturday and Sunday, to be available for early voting. Absentee ballots are available for those who will be truly out of town, out of state potentially, or already away at school if there are college students, et cetera. And then ultimately, all precincts vote in the high school on November 2nd. Thank you for taking time to share your story with the listeners and voters in Franklin, and good luck to you on November 2nd. And I'm sure we'll speak somewhere along the way as our paths continue to cross in Franklin.
Thank you so much, Steve. And let's raise that 17% municipal voting rate way up there.
Yeah, because in my 15 years, I generally use is the round numbers, 20% local, 40% for a budget, i.e. override, mm-hmm. 60% for state, 80% for presidential. And yet I'm hopeful that at least with the mail by vote available this year, we should get higher than 20%. The real question is going to be how high we're going to get. And that should be a new standard for us. But if it's not even into the 60, 80%, we still have some work to do.
Sure. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.